This is News and Notes. I'm Tony Cox. During his presidential campaign, President Barack Obama laid out an ambitious technology agenda for his administration. Now that he's in the White House, how will Mr. Obama implement those ideas? Today, our series on the Obama Effect continues with a look at the impact on technology. Here to size up Mr. Obama's tech agenda, our very own tech contributor, Mario Armstrong. Hello, Mario.
Hi there. How are you?
I'm fine.
Glad to be here.
Thank you. Glad to have you back. During the presidential campaign, we talked with you about President Obama's stand on key technology issues. He was candidate Obama at the time, of course. Remind us briefly about some of those issues. And now that he's in the office, what are some of the top priorities for his administration?
Yeah, well, early on, early on, he had been very forthcoming about how he envisioned technology and the role that it would play in the Obama administration. And that dates back actually to when he was a senator and he had put some other programs in place that were kind of like, if you can think of it like a Google search engine, if you will, back in Chicago. So he had some programs back then that he believed in technology could really assist growth and moving forward. And so you transition that now to where he is today. He's been playing technology largely to the point of transparency and to broadband access for all of Americans across the country, which has to date not been the case.
You know, one of the things that's associated with the new president from a technology standpoint that perhaps everyone can relate to was the issue of his BlackBerry and whether or not he was going to be allowed to keep it or not. Specifically, though, how has the president used technology, BlackBerry aside, to update and to revolutionize the White House itself?
Yeah, BlackBerry aside, when they first and foremost, the minute they made the formal announcement, the website changed. The WhiteHouse.gov website had an immediate makeover. In other words, they had already been working on developing that website, what it was going to stand for, how it was going to engage citizens, and how it was going to keep the same momentum that basically carried him into office throughout this administration. So, number one, the website made a drastic change and a tremendous shift. It opened up transparency. It put a lot of ways for individuals to feel that they could be more empowered to have better access or a direct access, almost like an open internet door to the administration. Number two, they look to hire a chief technology officer for the administration, which has been done. They've actually checked that off of their list. And that has never been a position within the White House to that level before. And then number three, I would say actually the stimulus package, coming through with $7.2 billion being placed specifically for broadband access in rural areas. Those are three key things. Oh, and the fourth thing would be upgrading the systems within the White House. Internet connectivity is extremely slow there. Outdated computers, viruses, just issues with just the infrastructure of technology that was there left by the previous administration.
You know, that was going to be my next question because I understood as the new administration staff took their offices in the White House, what they found was were computers that were, I suppose, outdated and very slow and not nearly as technologically advanced as you would expect from the White House.
You would expect from, the innovative country of the world that our White House. But, leadership is driven top down. And I'm not trying to point a finger here. I'm just saying you can look at companies as well as government and look at the leadership and whether or not they adopt technologies. And so my point is, that with the fact that they didn't seem to have old and outdated technology, you couple that now with an administration that's new, that basically, I say he made it into the White House due to the speed of the internet. So you have a bunch of people that are used to using Facebook, social networking, mobile phones, and wireless connectivity, and then you take them back into what feels like the 80s. That's just not going to work.
It seems really bizarre. I have another question for you, and I don't know if you have the answer to it or not. Since the president, I want to talk about the BlackBerry again. Since the president was allowed to keep his BlackBerry, are we to assume that there has been some sort of technological advancement with regard to security that the president's BlackBerry would have that my BlackBerry and your BlackBerry don't have?
Yeah, my BlackBerry and your BlackBerry sitting by the fire. We have the same old BlackBerry. Harris and everybody else is walking around. But, you know, we also have the same Cadillacs that everybody else has. We don't have the presidential Cadillacs. So you better believe his BlackBerry is has been secured. They won't say exactly which agency or who did it. I can tell you, I talked to RIM, the manufacturer of the BlackBerry. They did not create the device. So we have reason to believe, and many people have speculated, that it's a government agency. Some have actually speculated further that it was the NSA. We do know that the BlackBerry, for some odd reason, the number has come out that it cost $2,000. Still trying to figure out where that number is coming from, but that's what's been reported widely. So yes, this is supposed to be secure. It is only supposed to have limited access for family and friends. So that's going to be interesting. And the bottom line is, I think it's a bold step because you know, he still is subject to the Presidential Records Information Act. So you know, anything he does on that could, in fact, be subpoenaed. So, but he's used to using it. I think it's going to make him continue to have that comfort zone. I think he's probably going to be very cautious as to what messages he decides to use that for. But if people want to subpoena that, he's got to go and have somebody pick up the milk, maybe. You know, I don't know.
The president's got a black ops BlackBerry. That's going to be really.
Yeah, but they did. But they removed like some. From what I understand, you can't like ping it for like GPS location. So I believe GPS types of tracking or chips have been removed out of it. So I think it is a stripped down and highly secure BlackBerry.
One of the things, and you mentioned this earlier, Mario, that the president wants to do is he wants to put everybody on the internet who wants access to it, and he's trying to expand it into rural areas. Question is he trying to push the internet and technology onto areas and to people who may not really want it?
You know, I don't. That's a tough question. That's a really good question because, you know, I come from a frame of reference that everybody should want the internet, that the internet should be a utility. The internet should be like water. It should be like electricity. So that's hard for me to remove my own bias to answer that question. However, we have always talked about having a national broadband strategy, and that has not been the case. So the point is, there are people who do want it, and there may be some people who don't want it, but they don't have that option given to them at this point. So now we have Americans across the country who are not connected to this high-speed internet and don't understand what it's capable of doing, how it can increase your access to information, your knowledge, start new businesses, create innovation, do research, help education. Once you get access to it, I believe that does change things. So my suggestion is I'd rather people have the option and choose not to do it than the option not be there at all.
Well, let me ask you this then, because the tech sector, because all of this would have to cost money to make it happen, whether people wanted it or not, the president's intentions to expand internet access nationally. The tech sector is not insulated from the current economic crisis, I would not think. So what are you seeing as the biggest impact there?
From the tech sector in today's economy?
Yes.
Yeah, job loss. It's been a major. I mean, specifically, you're looking at places that are manufacturing is taking a hit. Companies are looking to do more with less. You are seeing just in recent news, other technology companies like HP and others are making some type of adjustments to not only their workforce but also to their strategies in a good way, though. And I think right now what we're finding is that. I think the technology industry, though, Tony, you can't – this country, businesses, the ecosystem cannot function without information technology. So you have companies like HP, Dell, Microsoft, Google. They're all being very creative now, or I would say more creative than I guess they had to have been in the past to really understand how they can make the largest impact without it affecting their employee workforce. And I think today's times are making people more innovative, and the mother is the necessity of innovation, and I think it's just making people be more creative now. I'm hoping that the stimulus package with having a chief technology officer in-house with $7.2 billion going towards from the stimulus going towards broadband with another $19 billion going towards health information records and technology and healthcare. I'm hoping that that is going to, when that money becomes available, make it so that the technology industry can still remain resilient because largely we have been. I mean, we're not immune from the problems, but we've been pretty resilient throughout. If you look at what's going on throughout the country, technology is sector has been doing fairly well.
You know, you mentioned that there was a new chief technology officer, and our conversation is coming to a close. But briefly, tell us who this person is, if you know, and what do you know about his or her background?
Yeah, well, he comes from Washington, D.C., and he was the, I hope I have the title right, but I believe he was the CIO, which would make him the chief chief information officer in Washington, D.C. So he comes out of that program. And, you know, one of the interesting things that he did do early on was he invited the community to get involved in technological issues and policy, excuse me, within Washington, D.C. So I do believe that you know, this is going to make a I think he's going to have a tough job ahead of him. Seriously, a tough job ahead of him. A lot of people are wondering exactly what the role should be and what the role should be about. But nonetheless, the fact is we have someone in that position now, and it's a good thing for the country.
You are absolutely right that he is going to have a big job. If you even look at just the fact that people are having difficulty converting from analog to digital television,
that's
a third of those conversions have taken place, and already
that's right.
FCC has
February 17th was 2 years. You're absolutely right.
And they've gotten thousands of complaints and questions about that. Mario Armstrong, thank you very much.
Thank you, Tony. Appreciate the time.
That was Mario Armstrong, our regular technology contributor, joining us from the studios of the Baltimore Sun.